This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Steve Simmons from Sun Media. Jim Bowden will join us, MLB analyst for MLB Radio Network on Sirius XM. It's a wild afternoon at the Rogers Center today. Jays walk off in style, man. Two nights in a row. Great finishes.
That would be one of those games where you get in the car to drive home or get on the subway, however you're getting home afterwards. And boy, do you have a lot to talk about. You can talk about Gibbons getting thrown out. You can talk about the two guys getting thrown out on the one pitch in the fifth inning. You can talk about coming from behind a couple of times. You can talk about the homer in the ninth inning, Kendrys Morales, 2 days in a row, same guy. Or the grand slam that wins it. I mean, there's so many different elements to what went on today in this rather forgettable Blue Jays season. This is one of the signature days.
Not to mention big picture, it completes a sweep. And sure, it's against the A's, but when you're in the position the Blue Jays were and have been all year, four wins in a row is four wins in a row. Well, you don't have to explain yourself.
They've been talking in the clubhouse forever about this mystery 10-game winning streak that's going to change their season around. I think it's too late for that. In fact, before today, they'd won three in a row and basically had made up no ground at all in the wild card race. And so that's what's going to happen when there's seven teams or six teams ahead of you. Every time you win a game, one of those six, two of those six, three of those six are going to win as well. And so it's so difficult to make up ground when there's that many teams to jump over. It's not so much how many wins are you going to get, it's how many wins you're going to get on the nights when other people lose.
Well, and you've got Tampa Bay playing the Yankees, so someone's getting a win. There, to your point, I mean, that's who you're chasing. Not to mention Kansas City, they continue to play really well. I think they're in Boston this weekend. So not that you're chasing the division, but if Kansas City keeps winning, you've dug yourself such a hole, you winning becomes irrelevant if everyone else continues to bat at a certain pace too. And I think a couple of weeks ago you were pointing to where that second wildcard team was at like a 5-16 winning percentage or something like that, which over the course of a year adds up to 85 wins maybe. Now it's up to 530, I believe, because Kansas City's been so hot. And Tampa's making moves. They continue to acquire guys and try to improve on their team. Jays are in a really bad spot.
Kansas City did what I thought the Blue Jays would do. They started poorly, and then they recovered from it, and then they've gotten going rather nicely. And I think they had like the second or third best record in the American League since, you know, the early part of the season. Tampa's really interesting to me because I didn't like that roster. I didn't like the team much, to be honest. I saw them early in the season. They've made a couple of pickups in the last 2 days. You don't often see Tampa, the team, trading to add players with the deadline coming on Monday.
Well, Kansas City has won eight games in a row. So the Jays winning four over the past eight, they've lost ground.
And it looks like they're looking at Francisco Liriano.
That report is out there that they're, which I think if you're a Blue Jay fan, you're like, thank you for two reasons. One, you're willing to take him and maybe you can get an asset back. But secondly, you're going to take him and your staff might get worse.
But if you're one
so
of
if
those...
we really believe we can catch you, pitch Liriano every fifth day if you want.
But I think he goes to Kansas City as a reliever, not a starter necessarily. But it's one of those weird kind of deals if it gets made, because that's the team that you still ostensibly are chasing. They're the number two wild card team right now. And you're giving them a pitcher, although you're losing, you know, you're getting some cash in hand, so to speak, budgetary-wise, for spending on other things.
But you're not going to spend it between now and the end of the year.
Well, you don't know. Depends what's available what's out there. Who knows?
So you think they actually can be a buyer and a seller at the same time?
I think you got to get creative when you have a team like this that's so unathletic and so old. You have to look at any possibility and every possibility.
Well, of course, but
so that's what I'm saying.
Every GM in the league would say that.
I know that, but I'm just
is
saying,
it realistic, Steve?
Some general managers only need to make one or two kind of moves. I think the Jays need to make six or seven kind of moves to get in a position to be where you'd want them to be,
which is quite daunting. And that's what makes it really difficult to believe they are going to turn this into an high 80s, low 90s win total team in 2018.
Well, the thing
it's such heavy lifting.
Except you've got a pitching staff. With no matter what you do, that can compete so long as you don't have blister issues. You've got a pitching staff right now, I think, that you can carry into next year with three quality starters and possibly a fourth starter in Biagini and a bullpen with Osuna and Tapera and Barnes, and depending on what they end up doing with Smith. So there's some depth there in the pitching area.
There's a foundation.
It's the everyday lineup that they have that's such, you know, needs so many adjustments. You need two corner outfielders. You might need a center fielder. That doesn't get talked about
that
much.
Well, Plar can't hit. He can defend as good as anybody in baseball, but he can't hit.
But if you have an entire team of people who can't hit, you know, do you need your center fielder to hit?
It would be an abundance of talent, and it can't hurt.
And your best hitters, Smoke and Kendrys Morales, are base cloggers. So they're really slow runners. So unless they're hitting home runs or doing that kind of thing, they're clogging up the bases.
All right, let's bring in Jim Bowden, SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio. How you doing, Jim? Thank you for doing this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
When it comes to the Blue Jays, you know, we've been looking ahead to 2018 for a few weeks now. It's been such an ugly year. And Steve just mentioned the potential nucleus of a rotation for next year, and it's going to revolve around Sanchez and Stroman. And we're so fascinated with their talents and when they've been healthy, what they've been able to produce. But from an objective view, an outsider's view, are you concerned at all about Stroman and Sanchez, how young they are and how many injury problems they've already had?
No, I'm not worried about that. I mean, you deal with that with almost every pitching staff that's out there. I think the fact you have Sanchez and Stroman to build around, and you still have control of J-Hap, you know, I think will bounce back and have a much better year next year. The fact that you have those three starters to build around, you got a strong bullpen with an impact closer in Osuna, I think that's the most positive, best part of this Blue Jays team going forward.
Did you get a chance to catch what happened today with the Jays, with Gibbons getting tossed and then Stroman and Martin both getting tossed on the same pitch in the same dispute?
No, I did not see that game, unfortunately. Tell me what happened.
Okay, so Stroman wasn't happy. He had been pitching well. He wasn't happy with the strike zone, and Will Little was the umpire behind the plate. And Walker had been out earlier, the pitching coach. He had some words with him. Gibbons had already been tossed. And Stroman threw what he thought was a strikeout pitch. It was a 3-2 count. Turns out it was ball four. Little called it a ball. Stroman looked at him, allegedly maybe said something, and Little tossed him. Martin turned around, said something. He tossed him. Steve and I have never seen that before. You've been around baseball for a long time. Have you ever seen a battery get tossed off the same dispute?
I don't remember it happening before, but, you know, the one thing we do know is when things aren't going well in the one loss column and you're sitting there at the bottom looking up at everybody, frustrations can get to you, and all of a sudden, you know, you blow up and these kind of things happen. I'm not saying I've ever seen a battery ejected on one pitch, no, but I certainly understand the frustrations for a team that was in the league championship series the last 2 years. To go as far back as they've gone quickly, as old as this team has gotten, as fast as they have, and then all of a sudden you get an umpire that's squeezing you here. Yeah, you know, the frustrations, you know, we call it the dog days of summer, but I certainly can understand that. You know, everyone is hearing all the trade rumors that are going around, everything in the clubhouse. Liriano's about to go to the Kansas City Royals, and Marco Estrada might get traded to Houston. I mean, you keep hearing that, and you're on the mound, and you're not getting a call, and you're frustrated. These things happen, and tomorrow will be a new day.
I wonder about the umpire, though, in this situation. I don't often like to sort of focus on the umpire, but earlier in the season, he tossed Bob Melvin and another member of the A's at similar times. And Sal Bando at the time said it was the worst game of umpiring he'd ever seen. And this is the same guy who also tossed Tony Pena in the World Baseball Classic. So I'm starting to wonder a little bit about the home plate umpire versus the robot discussion, and wondering where you fit in on that.
Yeah, I'm fine with the robot. I mean, look, I understand the human element of umpires, but, you know, fans nowadays, we just want you to get it right. Like, we don't want the umpires to be a story in a game. You know, last night when Adrian Beltre got ejected because he moved the on-deck mat towards him with a sense of humor, and he gets ejected, and that changes the game. Here's a guy trying to get 3,000 hits. He had three extra base hits and a homer. He gets ejected for that. I mean, I don't ever want the story to be about an umpire the next day, and I think fans, in this generation, the millennials just want you to get it right. I mean, instant replay's been a big success because people just want it right. We don't want missed calls and missed it. In terms of strike zones, to rely on so many different humans who have so many different strike zones, it's frustrating. You know, Marcus Stroman, I didn't see that pitch you're referring to today, but probably that pitch would have been a strike based on what you're saying with 85% of the umpires, but then 15% it's not. Like, if you all of a sudden have a computer or a robot or whatever you want to call it with laser beams, get the strike zone correct and accurate, guess what? These issues won't happen. It'll go away. We won't have to be talking about this on talk radio. Instead, we can talk about how the Blue Jays need to rebuild their position players, which is much more fun. But for Little to make the conversation about him tells you your answer. Yes, we want robot umpires.
See, I look at it differently because we've been talking about what they're going to do with their position players for weeks. This is actually something new and interesting. It's actually, you know, personality and character, and I'm with you. I mean, it's some, everyone says they want to see it get it right, but I would be fearful, Jim, that at some point we're going to get to robotics across the sporting landscape, and then we're going to realize that it's entertainment. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be different. It gives us something to talk about. I'm fine with it.
Well, let me ask you this on those lines, though. When is an umpire entertaining to you? Like, when does he entertain you?
Well, Ron Luciano did, and that was about, what, 30 years ago?
And he's not here. Frank Pulley entertained me, too. He's not here either. So who's entertaining you? Joe West, C.B. Buckner?
No.
Angel Hernandez? I think not.
You need a second dance partner, obviously. But I don't see John Gibbons running out to a robot and kicking dirt on it. So, you know, you need someone else to be involved.
But here's the thing, you don't, managers, John Gibbons doesn't run out to argue a ball and strike. He can't. You get ejected. You can't argue balls and strikes. So that takes that argument out. The only reason Gibbons ran out is he threw his players out of the game. But the reality is you can't argue balls and strikes. So what does it matter? The umpires don't entertain you. The only time I've been entertained by a home plate umpire in a ball and strike is when Nelson Cruz came up in the All-Star game, handed his iPhone to Yadier Molina, and said, take a picture of me and Joe West. And he's like, what? And he took a picture. That was entertaining. But that was because of Nelson Cruz, not because of Joe West. So, no, let's just get it right. We don't need to argue balls and strikes. I'm so sick of hearing people, he had a wide strike zone, he had a low strike zone, I didn't get that 2-2 pitch. Really? Just fix it. If you have the robots and computers do it, we won't talk about it again, and it won't bother anybody, and we won't discuss it.
So you've sat in the general manager's chair, and you've done the job and understand what it is to make a trade and understand how difficult it can be at times. When you're, you know, having a losing season and you need to upgrade in places, how difficult, not just what's coming up in the next week or next month with the other trade deadline, but how difficult are the next 5 or 6 or 7 months going to be for Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins?
Yeah, it's really almost in an impossible position they put themselves in because you don't have a lot that you can trade to get return that's significant enough to make you better. The best asset you have is Josh Donaldson, and you don't want to move him. But really, where the Blue Jays are, if you could turn him into three young pieces, you should do it. Because the problem that the Blue Jays have, which it happened overnight, you got old, and you got declining, and you got little trade value. I mean, Russell Martin's a 217 hitter. That's what he is. Troy Tulowitzki's got 7 homers and an on-base percentage of .301. Jose Bautista's hitting .220, and his usual high OBP is now down to 33%. So you're looking on the field, who's going to play left field? Like, you just look around the field, and this team, old, decline. Like, who do you get excited about? Justin Smoke's had a great career year. I hope it's for real. I hope he can repeat it. Morales has been okay, I guess, at DH, although .314 for an on-base doesn't make up for the 20 home runs for me. But, I mean, what else do you have to build around in the field? So how are you going to fix it? You don't want to trade the three young pitchers because that's the strength of your team. So it's almost like I'm not so sure instead of just trading Estrada, Liriano, Joe Smith, and the other free agents, I'm not so sure that the conversation shouldn't be, you know, hey, Boston, you want to give us Devers and Travis and Groom for Donaldson? I mean, I'm just not so sure that you're not at the point where Happ and Donaldson shouldn't be shopped if they have the most trade value.
With Jim Bowden, former MLB GM, would you just make deals to make them, though, at this point?
No.
Like Liriano and Estrada?
No, that's stupid. Don't do that.
So what kind of value can you really expect, though? I mean, these guys, they've been, Estrada's been so bad. Even last night, you know, he kind of escaped in terms of the numbers, but I think he threw 100 pitches and only 52 were strikes.
I don't know what's wrong with him. Has anyone done an MRI in the shoulder or elbow to make sure he's healthy?
No. Not that we're aware of, anyway.
I just wonder that. If it's not mechanics, how does a guy go from the three prior years having the best batting average against, including better than Chris Sale in the American League, to this guy? So, you don't give him away, but you got to fix it. You got to figure out what it is. You know, if somebody can fix the problem, maybe by the end of August you can trade him on August 31st. To give Liriano away to Kansas City for nothing is dumb, but if you get a piece back, move him. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, but to give them away, to make a trade, just to make a trade, I'd rather stand pat than just give players away. But I, with an open mind, if your name isn't Stroman, Sanchez, or Osuna, I wouldn't have anybody that's an untouchable. I'd be listening on everybody because I just think this team has to get younger. It's got to get more athletic. I just think there's a lot of work to do before the Blue Jays can get back to another ALCS.
Is this the end, do you figure, for Bautista, Jim?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's time to move on. I think, and I love Joey Bats, but I think it's time that the Blue Jays get more athletic in the outfield and have a more complete lineup. I think they've got to concentrate on improving the team on base percentage, and I think defense and range and speed and the need to play a factor is they're rebuilding this team. There's nothing worse than a team that doesn't get on base, and when they do get on base, they clog the bases. There's nothing worse than your two best hitters this year probably have been smoking Morales, I guess, because of Donaldson's injury, mm-hmm. I guess, and they're station to station.
In terms of league-wide, there were three big names, three pitchers that people seem to be focused on. Yu Darvish, who just got rocked. Verlander, who's got more years left on his contract, a very bloated contract. And then Sonny Gray. How would you rank them in terms of your confidence that they'll actually get dealt between now and the end of the month?
Dealt. Okay. Gray's going for sure. So he's gone. He's won. That's easy. I'm going to say Darvish 2 and Verlander 3. John Daniels is really good at trading, and he's very creative, and that's a pretty good rental, and JD getting a return and then can re-sign him at the end of the year makes sense. I'll do Verlander 3. Again, I'm betting on Billy Bean and John Daniels over Al Avila making trades. Al hasn't proven to me what he can do under pressure. And with Verlander, with $56 million left in 2 years, there's not a lot of teams willing to take that on. So it takes a lot of creativity to find a way to pay down some of the salary, get the right prospects, and get him to waive the no trade. It's very complicated, and I'm not sure that wouldn't be the least likely move of the three. So I'll go Gray, Darvish, and Verlander.
Thank you for the input and the takes, as always. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
There's Jim Bowden, former MLB GM and MLB Network radio analyst and host on Sirius XM. That seems to be the order in terms of confidence. Sonny Gray's getting dealt, but Verlander's got so much money left on his deal. He's got 10 and 5 rights. It's a tough move, but that's the guy I would want. Even though his numbers are what they are, he's been great this year. Last year, he finished second in Cy Young.
Fascinating what's happened to the Detroit teams owned by the late Mike Ilitch since he's passed away. Red Wings missed the playoffs for the first time in how many years? Ridiculous number of years.
25 or something.
The Tigers had been contenders of sorts for most of the time they were spending the big money, knocking on doors at least. They're having a horrible year. And they have this guy with an enormous contract that they're going to have to eat a large portion of to even be able to move him. And you wonder, you know, I'm not saying there's even a factor involving Mike Ilitch's life, but when Mike Ilitch owned the Tigers and owned the Red Wings, they were far more successful than they've been since he's passed away.
Well, and the Red Wings have that new rink that they're opening this year. And I think they are going to be awful. I expect them to probably finish last in the division.
Well, I look at the Eastern Conference right now in the NHL, and there aren't very many teams I can point to and say they are certainly not going to make the playoffs. Detroit is the one team I look at and say they are certainly not going to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see them. I don't see Buffalo either.
See, I think Buffalo is going to be interesting now. They've made a coaching change. They have some young talent. Let's see what happens with Eichel in his third year. You know, you get some change there. Management has changed. That happens. Sometimes things change. I think Florida missed the playoffs last year. We'll be right back in the hunt again. And the team that I think is quietly getting better is Carolina.
Carolina loves their defense. Loves their defense. Scoring up front has been a question mark for them for a number of years. And they acquired and signed Scott Darling, who put up good numbers, but is a backup.
Well, we're going to find out. That's the whole thing with him. We're going to find out if is he a guy who can go from being a second goalie on a great team to a first goalie somewhere. Is he Cam Talbot? We're going to find that out. I don't know. You get real mixed opinion as to what kind of goalie he is and what kind of goalie he's going to be.
Yeah, the people I talk to and trust that are knee-deep in the position are not fans.
Well, it's going to be interesting.
We'll find out.
Because same thing with Dallas in the West did sort of the same kind of move with Ben Bishop, although Ben Bishop's more proven.
He's much more proven.
Than Darling is. But if Darling can give them better goaltending than they've had the last few years, and they haven't had very good goaltending, with that young defense and some emerging forwards, I think that's a better team. I think the Islanders are interesting just because Tavares is there. And who can you say won't make it other than Detroit?
Yeah, Detroit, I don't see it. Jersey's made some moves.
See, Jersey would be my other team.
I don't see Jersey making it.
Yeah, I should have mentioned Jersey.
Yeah,
Jersey has a good goaltending, though.
They do, and he had a down year. I think he'll bounce back. And goaltending can carry you. And they've made some moves. They picked up some guys. I think they've improved their offense a little bit. But I don't love Jersey. I don't love Detroit. I don't love Buffalo. I'm not convinced Florida takes that next step. They've had just such a weird couple of years there. And
see, my thing with Florida is when you have exceptional players, those guys change your teams. To me, they have two exceptional players in Aaron Ekblad on defense and Barkov at center. And if they can get Barkov to play a full season and Ekblad to play a full season, I think they're going to be a difficult team again.
Yeah, Ekblad, it concerns me, the concussion issues he's had. I have not felt confident in terms of the news I've heard on Roberto Luongo either. I'm not sure his hip is going to hold up. If you're asking for James Reimer to be a 60-start guy,
that doesn't happen. We know what that means.
He's never got there. And if he has to, I don't think he's got enough in the tank to do it for you over the course of 82. So I don't love that option for Florida. And I think Nick Bjugstad was supposed to keep growing, and he didn't. And I don't know.
I want to see.
I'm torn on Florida.
I want to see what Bugner does when he goes in there. But when you have an A defenseman and you have an A centerman, I think that elevates everything. And you look around. How many teams have that A defenseman and the A center? The Leafs have the A center.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the A defenseman.
No, there's not many in the league. There's no question. Another young NFL player retiring. This one is a Canadian. We'll tell you about that. Jim Popp will join us, GM of the Argos, later in the hour. And is there a chance Kaepernick is getting back in the NFL? We'll touch on that next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. And check out every hour of the show on iTunes. Giveaway time. Phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. Caller 10 picks up a Bacardi prize pack, including a $100 LCBO gift card. You must be 19 years of age or older to win. 416-870-1050. I almost gave my own number out.
Did you ever know Rick Fraser, who covered hockey and golf and boxing for the Toronto Star for many, many years?
Okay.
He was one of the great characters of the business back. He's passed away a number of years ago. But Rick Fraser loved his rum and loved a number of other things. He was traveling to Vegas once, and he went into the bar. He had to stop in Chicago and transfer planes. And he stopped in Chicago. He said, come on, let's go get a drink. So we went with him. We went to get a drink. The bartender knew his drink.
That's outstanding.
The busiest airport in the world. And the bartender knew Rick Fraser's drink. I thought that was like...
That is a veteran.
That's
movie.
Hall of Fame, you know, movement there.
Very, very impressive.
Yes.
Another young NFL player deciding to hang him up. John Urschel, who's a Canadian kid from Winnipeg, went to Penn State, and math genius. Many people have heard of him because he's done a bunch of videos on this. It's been promoted how smart he is. Like, this guy's brain is at a different level, and I guess now he wants to protect that brain. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the CTE information that came out earlier in the week happens to coincide with him deciding to walk away. So this is a big story because it's been happening a lot recently. Past couple of years, young guys who are under contract that can continue to play in the NFL decided, you know what, I'm out. I feel okay. I want to continue to feel okay. But John Urschel is a guy we know maybe because he's Canadian. This is a 24-hour story. It's a story that people attach themselves to because some people want to see the game fail. Some people are fascinated with head trauma and what's happening, and I share that fascination to an extent. But with all due respect to John, who's been on the show before, until a superstar walks away at the age of 26, or a quarterback, or number one running back, or number one wideout walks away, maybe a pass rusher, maybe a cornerback, this will be treated again as a 24-hour news cycle, and then we move on.
But I don't think, if you're the guy retiring, and you have your reasons, and you want to protect your well-being as it is, and maybe that's not even the reason. We haven't heard officially exactly what the reason is for his retirement. Then it's his story. And he's not... I don't suspect John Urschel is retiring to make a point across all of football. He's retiring because he believes it's his time at this age and this condition and without, you know, the brain trauma I guess he thinks might happen if he continues to play, playing this position certainly that he plays. So I don't think he looks at it as, you know, am I making a statement here that will impact all of football? A year ago, Tyler Varga, a rare Canadian... because we've seen Canadian linemen in the NFL, but very rarely do we see Canadian running backs. Here was a guy who played for Western, and then he transferred from Western, went to the United States, went to the Indianapolis Colts, made the team, looked like he was on the verge of becoming something, and then he quit. Said, I'm an Ivy League guy. This isn't working for me. I don't want to end up, you know, with my head damaged. And he quit last year. I think it was last year at this time. And so you're seeing more of the younger guys just starting out their careers making decisions when they have other options. Are we finding people who don't have other options doing this?
I can't recall. I mean, I'm sure there is, and I'm sure there have been. But again, we're also talking about the profile of the players. And I do think that's an important point in terms of moving the conversation forward, how big of a ripple effect it will be and have. If it's a starting quarterback that walks away. If Matt Ryan showed up today and said, you know what, actually, I'm done. Wow, is that a story.
Well,
with all due respect to offensive linemen and linebackers, it just doesn't have the same effect.
Well, didn't Tony Romo and Jay Cutler each have the ability to continue in the NFL?
But they got out because Romo's back. He could barely stand, his shoulders, and he wasn't going to be a Cowboy. You know, I think that was a part of it. And he had opportunity to walk in to be the number one man. He's probably making, what, $6-8 million to walk into CBS? Cutler's making a fortune, too, to walk into Fox?
Point taken, because that's what I'm talking about. If you have another option, if you have somewhere to go, if you're Urschel and you're a math genius, if you're Tyler Varga and you think you can do something outside football, at the same time, while this story's going on, another Canadian, Orlando Franklin, signed on with the New Orleans Saints, who was let go for money reasons, I believe, by the Chargers. But, you know, so we have one guy leaving, one guy going back in.
And hopefully sticking around.
Yeah.
But another thing I saw today, some people questioning why these guys have to wait until camp starts and this late into the season or off season before they retire. And I take serious issue with that because especially if you're a lineman. Urschel's a center slash guard. Those guys do not spend the offseason putting their pads on and smacking into each other. Sometimes you get into a situation where maybe he was thinking during the offseason, I'm not sure if I got it in me anymore, or I'm not sure it's in my best interest. And then you show up, you put your pads on for the first time, you get hit, and then you say, oh, I know it's done. Like, I don't blame a guy for being like, I want to try it one more time. Not necessarily in September when the games are starting, but camps are underway. These guys in March, April, and May, and June are not getting hit. They're not running into people at the gym. Sometimes you got to get hit again. Sometimes you got to put the pads on. You got to get up at 6 a.m. and go to the facility before you really realize, you know what, I'm officially at peace with the idea of moving on.
Well, one thing you know about pro athletes, and I think it's not just football players. I think it's pro athletes of any sport. You have to really train to be able to play your sport. And you have to train year-round to be able to play the sport. And as you're training for that season, and in the back of your mind, you're thinking, as you point out, you're thinking, I don't know if I want to do this a whole lot longer. But I don't want to make a decision yet. Let me get into camp. Let me see my friends. Let me talk to my coaches. Let me get the feel of all this. And I've seen it with NHL players. I've seen it with football players. They walk into camp. They either go for their first practice or they, before they're even dressing for the practice, they look around and say, you know what?
I'm done.
And because you can't half it. You can't go through the motions and make a career in pro sports. You're all in. And if you decide you're not all in, whether it's CTE, whether it's brain injuries, whether it's concussions, whether your back is bad, whether your knees are bad, it doesn't matter what the reason is. If you can't be all in, then you're wasting your time and your team's time by trying to be the opposite.
And John Urschel, again, deciding to walk away from the Ravens. Speaking of the Ravens, there's a report or belief that maybe they would be in on Colin Kaepernick because Joe Flacco is having back issues right now, and Ryan Mallett is their backup. And you can say a lot of things about Kaepernick, but he's better than Ryan Mallett. We'll touch on that quickly, and then Jim Popp, the GM of the Argos, will join us. We'll get to that next. All right, Jim Popp, GM of the Argos, will join us here in a moment. So the Ravens may be having quarterback issues, and John Harbaugh, their coach, came out today and spoke glowingly of Colin Kaepernick, said he's a great player, he's spoken with him many times, knows him through his brother Jim from his Niners days. Yet, nothing's happened in terms of Kaepernick actually signing with the Ravens.
Well, they sure came close to winning that Super Bowl and really should have won the Super Bowl. With Kaepernick in San Francisco, had they allowed him to run just a little bit in that final drive instead of him passing the ball, which wasn't, you know, from in tight there, wasn't the smartest way to operate. And I believed, I was at that game, I believe to this day that had he run the ball, he would have scored because he was hard to stop at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see him going, I can see the Harbaugh brothers are really tight, and I could see him ending up.
But I don't think it's about the coach. This story stopped being about a coach a long time ago. This is an owner signing off on Kaepernick coming in.
I'm not convinced of that, to be honest. I think the coaches, if the coach says, I want this guy to be my quarterback, I don't think the story is so poisonous that they're not going to go with that.
I don't think it should be. But there was a J.D. Power survey that came out today. And last year, the NFL had some ratings issues, at least in the first half of the season. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I was when I read that the majority of answers that came in via this survey, when they asked fans who stopped watching the NFL for whatever reason, the number one response was the anthem protesting. So even if you think it's bogus, I think it's bogus, an owner I could see hearing that and saying, oh, I got problems on my hands. Fans are backlashing because of what Kaepernick started and what other players were doing.
Do you know what the number one television show in America was last year?
Probably the NFL.
Do you know what the number two television show in America was?
Probably the NFL.
Number three?
Yeah, no,
I
understand
it's nine
it.
Of the top 10 shows last year in America were the NFL. So for
but
all
if you expect 25 million and you get 20, you've got an issue.
All their attendance issues, it's the best TV show in the world. It's the most watched television show in the world.
Maybe not
the world. Sorry, because I'm avoiding Asia in that. In North America, it's the number one television show.
All right, let's bring in the GM of the Argos. Here's Jim Popp. Jim, are you tracking this Kaepernick story? And if so, what's your take on the whole thing?
I wish I could help you guys, but no, I'm not. I got other things to do.
So no interest in the idea of him ever coming to the CFL, I guess.
You know what? For the amount of money that he's been paid, and, you know, really at this stage of his career, would really be his want and desire to want to play for him to come to the CFL, because once guys have made that much money, that's really what it comes down to.
Jim, we saw the retirement yesterday of Urschel in Baltimore, the Canadian center. We saw the retirement a year ago of Tyler Varga, who made it in the NFL as a Canadian running back, which is pretty rare historically. When you see young guys early in their career who haven't made the kind of money you're talking about walking away from football, what are your thoughts?
Everybody's got a different story. I mean, a lot of it may never, you know, they might have had some injuries that to them, you know, that one shot, you know, the NFL might have been their dream, and that one shot, whether it was short-lived, because for most of them, it's only 2.5 years. That's the average. It's just a situation that they've had enough. Others have business ventures. Others have business opportunities that are more solidified. There's a lot of things in people's lives that you don't know why they make the decisions that they do, and they're the only ones that can answer that.
With Jim Popp, GM of the Argos, you guys have had a wild couple of weeks, and you had a big win earlier this week on a big night with Flutie and others in the building. You're 3-0 against your division this year. Why do you think you've had so much success against your own division?
Well, I tell you, I know that the two teams we played out west from one situation, the two games that we lost, Winnipeg and BC, we probably didn't play our best game. They got to give them a lot of credit, and they both played solid games. Within our division, it's been a little bit of a shootout. We've come out on top in a lot of those games where, you know, in the last few years, I'd say Ottawa came out on top in a lot of those games. You know, when I was in Montreal, we came out on the short end of a lot of those games. I think there's a lot of parity in our league. There has been. And it's just finding a way to accomplish those things and believing in one another. But, you know, right now for us, we've been able to do it within our division, and hopefully we can continue that string with not just in our division but the other teams.
When you're there Monday night and you're seeing the reception that Doug Flutie got, the reception that those Grey Cup teams, the players got as they were being introduced, and you've only been here a pretty short time, what does it feel like to be the Argo general manager and see those guys being appreciated the way they are, knowing that you weren't here for you've only been here for a very short time?
No, you know, it's special. You know, being in the league as long as I have and getting to know all these men that played the game, and there's several players on that back-to-back championship team that I had the pleasure of working with or maybe even brought into the league that were in Baltimore that came over to, came over to, Toronto and or later played in Montreal. But you know, it's a great feeling to watch, you know, because the mastery of Doug Flutie along with all the other great players that were there playing, they deserve that. But you know what I do know about, you know, our Toronto fan base. We have some diehard fans. We have, you know, no matter how many, you know, and it's getting better and better each game that we've had that show up. When you go out, they're decked in their gear, and they appreciate the history of the oldest sports franchise in North America.
Jim, I was in the tailgate zone on Monday night before the game, and I thought the atmosphere in that area, certainly before the game, was phenomenal, the best I've seen so far. And I thought it carried into the stadium. As you're watching the game and you win it on a last-second field goal, what are you thinking being on the sidelines?
Well, you know, it's one of these things that obviously the more people, the more screaming, the more yelling that when you're in a stadium, people that have never done this, when you run out of a tunnel, you come onto a field and that crowd roars, a big play happens, it roars. I mean, it shoots a spectrum of energy through your body, and the players really feed off of it, and it's just an electric atmosphere. So, yeah, you know, the stadium was really, you're right. It had a great feeling walking into it before we started. We were able to captivate them, to keep them in tune all the way till the end of the game. and fortunate for us and our fans, we came out on top. But, you know, it's great to see and like the area that you're in there and that you are part of, and even the tailgating that's going on outside of the stadium, which is an aspect of something that we're able to do right now in the city that no one's able to do in the other sports franchises, gives you a little boost. But it's a fun atmosphere, and obviously we're building on that.
The Argos are in Saskatchewan this Saturday, looking to go 4-2 on the season. They certainly are off to a good start, sitting atop the Eastern Division. So enjoy the weekend. Good luck on Saturday night, and thank you for doing this, Jim.
Hey, thank you as always. Got a tough one, but we look forward to an opportunity here. Hopefully we'll get a win and bring it back and take on Calgary next week at home.
All right, good luck. We'll talk then.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
There's Jim Popp, GM of the Argos. You can hear that game on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN.
They play Saskatchewan. Chris Jones is the coach, general manager, president, vice president, and everything else with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He's been at war with, like, everyone this year. He's been fighting with the Stampeders. He's been fighting with the Argos. He's been taking shots at these guys. He's been taking shots at that guy.
The league. And like, last year he had real issues.
And he's not getting it done there.
They're 1-3.
It's interesting to see what's going to happen there. He said something about... He took a shot at the Argos talking about the number of people who were watching his team practice in Regina. He says it's like an Argo crowd. Not a nice thing to say for a guy who used to coach here, especially.
No kidding. He was there for the 100th anniversary.
I believe
Great
he's the
Cup winner.
I believe he's the reason they won that Great Cup, the way he coached on defense.
Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Yankees, the Cubbies, and Winnipeg by 4 tonight over the Alouettes. Throw down 20, you can score 83. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. And get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine. Get way into the game. Thank you for this, Steve.
I enjoyed it, as always.
We'll do it again soon. He is Steve Simmons from Sun Media, TSN The Reporters. I'm Brian Hayes. We are out of here. I'm back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.